take up your cross and follow me. This phrase has echoed throughout Christianity and calls to discipleship in the music that we sing. It's one of those phrases that's so common that it's almost lost on us sometimes, or at least maybe just me. Until I spent the past 2 weeks pondering this phrase, this text, and the more I thought about it, take up your cross and follow me, the more something seemed off. Because here's what I realized, friends, here's the problem. Jesus said these words more than a year before his own arrest, trial, and public execution. He said it more than a year before the cross, as we know it, was even a thing. He spoke of a cross long before he was ever nailed to one. And for so long, people have understood this phrase to be a foreshadowing of Jesus' death, a way for him to speak of his sacrificial work on the cross as a reversal of the effects of our sinfulness. But his initial hearers wouldn't have thought of that when he was speaking of a cross. They would have thought of one very specific thing, one large, looming, intimidating thing. The cross was associated with the Roman Empire. Rome ruled over God's people. Rome ruled over practically all of the people. And Rome was a force to be reckoned with. It was an empire that worked hard to get and maintain power, security, and glory. And to do that, it had to silence anybody who would dare seek anything else. And so crosses were Rome's preferred method of public humiliation and death for political prisoners, rebels, and traitors, i.e. anyone who would deny the lordship of Caesar. And so to take up your cross is a very specific invitation to a very specific way of life. But we'll come back to that in a little bit. For now, let's consider Peter. Peter, who lived under the rule of the Roman Empire. Peter, who read his Old Testament about a promised king from the line of David. Peter, who had just watched what we know now to be the previous chapters in Mark, Jesus heal a sick girl, miraculously feed a massive crowd, give hearing to a deaf man and sight to a blind man. Peter put two and two together when Jesus asked, "Who do you believe that I am?" And he answered what most were hoping and thinking, "You are the Messiah." That sounds good on paper. We think, "Oh, he got it right. Finally. Good job, Peter." But Messiah was also a very specific connotation. Messiah was one who would come with a thundering army, who would strike down the Roman Empire like a conquering hero, who would take back the land of the Israelites and establish God's throne forever through any means necessary. Peter was thinking along the lines of how the world, of how his world especially, operated. And he was missing the big picture entirely. "If that's what you're telling people about who I am," Jesus said, "then stop talking. If you're telling them about the amazing things I can do, if you're telling them that I'm powerful and increasing in stature, if you're telling them that I'm capable of anything, then you're already focusing on the wrong things. Just stop talking." So where did Peter go wrong? I mean, he'd been following Jesus for a while. And is it possible that maybe we have gone wrong at times, like Peter? I mean, looking back at those previous chapters in Mark, Jesus had, in fact, done all those things. But if you read them closely, the focus was not on the flash or the glory. He went first to Tyre, that foreign territory, seemingly just to heal the Gentile woman's daughter and have a strange interaction with her about outsiders and faith. And then he left. That's all he did there. Then he went on to feed a crowd also made up of Gentiles, and it appears that he had no other motive than to feed them. It doesn't say in the text that he stayed to heal them or teach them or talk to them at all. And then the Pharisees came asking for a sign, and he refused to present it because they weren't ready to hear his truth. Then he goes on to heal a deaf man and a blind man in private and ask them not to tell anybody about it. Peter saw influence and reputation in Jesus working to his own advantage, and Jesus asked him to look more closely. It wasn't about his ability to heal. It wasn't about performing miracles. It wasn't about glory. It wasn't about any particular title. For Jesus, it was only ever about the people on the receiving end of these acts. It was about noticing the marginalized, applauding the faith of those thought to be on the outside. It was about challenging the respected and the honored when they didn't act with mercy. It was about standing with the voiceless, the shamed, the feared, and the rejected. It was about claiming oneness with the humiliated and defending the condemned. It was about breaking with the tradition in order to draw people back to the heart of love. For Jesus, it was even sometimes about disregarding and redefining Scripture when the spirit of the law had been misconstrued. Peter was focused on Jesus' glory, but was completely blinded to his actual mission. Jesus was about radical love and radical hospitality, and it flew in the face of empire. He acknowledged and welcomed and lifted up those who would be considered an embarrassment to the empire, those who were hidden away because they were a threat to its glory and its majesty. Jesus was the ultimate revolutionary, and so, of course, the empire had to shut him down. And they used their greatest, most common method, public humiliation and death on a cross. And this is where Jesus' words come back in a very different way. If you're going to live and move and have your being with me, then you must be ready to deny yourself and take up your cross. If anybody wants to save their life, they will lose it. If anybody loses their life on behalf of my way, they will actually save it. And again, this is not a commentary on how one can achieve eternal salvation. It can't be. Because if a Christian's main desire is to save their own life, i.e. spend eternity in God's kingdom of love, then Jesus just said, you're only interested in your own desires and you've already missed the big picture. It's Peter all over again. What does it mean to be powerful, well-known, well-loved, and secure if you lose yourself and you lose your calling along the way? Jesus says that this kind of life ends up having no value at all for the kingdom, and it can feel quite empty. And what does it mean to deny oneself, to say no to oneself? We've maybe denied ourselves a certain food for a certain season, but can we deny our thoughts of getting good things just for ourselves? Or our desiring evil for our enemies? Can we stop our lusting after people and stuff, or our feelings of revenge toward those who have wronged us? Denying oneself is concerned with the will, that our own will should not be the controlling factor in our life. Sacrifice is about foregoing something that is certainly valuable for the sake of something that has a more pressing claim. Sacrifice implies determining what things or people are of the utmost value. And so for the disciples, and often for us, the sacrifice is our own power, our own stability, our own popularity, our own security. The call to take up our cross is a call to be aware of the Rome-like empires in which we live, in our own context, and be willing to publicly speak the truth of Jesus, of who Jesus really was, and live out his way, all the while knowing that we very well could suffer the consequences of that display of faith in whatever terms our empires use. It might not be shaped like a cross, but it could have the same effects. Jesus' call to take up your cross was a direct invitation to defy the empire because it stood for oppression, abuse of power, violence, self-righteous glory, even if it meant that the empire would shut you down. Or put in a way that maybe we can better understand today, Jesus asks his followers, are you going to comply with the empire? Or are you going to join the rebellion, the light side? Except the only difference is that his rebellion was nonviolence and didn't take place in a galaxy far, far away. But it's at this point in the text that I can see why Peter struggled. This is not an appealing invitation, friends. This is kind of terrifying. And it encompasses our entire life. And so, of course, we ask, where's the hope, Jesus? Where's the good news? It was about this point in my sermonizing this week that Pastor Josh walked by my office and said, can I talk to you for a minute or are you busy? I said, I'm writing a sermon. Please come in. And he just happened to talk to me about the Beatitudes. Perfect timing. They aren't listed in Mark, but nevertheless, Jesus publicly in the Beatitudes blessed those who are persecuted on his behalf. He spoke blessing, encouragement, and God's comforting presence to those who have picked up their crosses and confessed the real mission of Jesus in a world that is seeking our allegiance toward anything but his kingdom. The good news is that Jesus was willing to follow his own way all the way to the end. He lived his whole life on behalf of others, including those who would deny him in any capacity and hide away under the false security of the empire. Everything he did was to show that God deeply knows and loves the world and will never, ever, 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 ever give up on us. Each day is a new invitation to take up our cross again, even if we quietly laid it down yesterday. Jesus picked up his cross for that Gentile woman and her daughter in Tyre. Jesus picked up his cross for that hungry crowd of 4,000 outsiders who'd been forgotten and slipped through the cracks of the empire. Jesus picked up his cross for the deaf and the blind. Jesus picked up his cross for disciples like Peter who just couldn't wrap their heads around his actual mission. And Jesus picked up his cross for you and for me, to give us the strength to go and do likewise. Thanks be to God.